We'll get started again on our final segment. So, again, we're going to look at one last technology, WiMAX. And the official description of WiMAX is a standards-based technology enabling the delivery of last-mile wireless broadband access as an alternative to cable and DSL, and that is, again, what it was initially intended to do, was to be a high-speed point-to-point connection. Okay. And so, because of that, it was something that focused on data rates first and foremost. Mobility is sort of an optional, it's a bolt-on later. Okay. However, it is there's something sort of magical about adding on mobility. Again, think about the issues of handovers primarily, so there is something to be done, but it's not insurmountable. And as such, it has sort of attempted to provide a competing competition for mobile telephony standards. And so various versions of WiMAX comply with either the 3G or 4G standard. 802.16e complies with the 3G standard, and then 802.16l complies with the 4G standard. So, again, there have been a number of standards sort of evolving for WiMAX. Each of them gets their own letter. 802.16 is the first that was 3G compatible. And so what it allows for is handovers between base stations. All of the 802.16 standards have been OFDM based. In 802.16e, scalable OFDMA is introduced, again, to allow for more flexibility in transmission and to sort of, again, being able to adapt well to channel conditions. And so it also uses antenna diversity schemes, so MIMO and hybrid ARQ. We'll get into that. And so, again, the main thing is it's using OFDM and MIMO. And again, various improvements have been made over the years, and this has culminated for the moment, and moving on, of course, in 802.16m, which is Wireless MAN Advanced, and is certified as IMTS Advanced compliant. So what we're going to have, again, a fairly quick look at is just some of the features of 802.16e and then following on 802.16m. Okay. Now, each of the standards allows for a number of different design options. Therefore, being standard compliant is not sufficient for interoperability. So again, there's a number of PHY options. And then again, that's decreasing. But you can also have changes in the MAC, the duplex and frequency bands, etc. So within that standard, you need to ensure then interoperability. And so that's ensured through the function of profiles, and you have system and certification profiles. Okay. And a system profile defines your PHY and MAC layer options from the various, selected from the various feature standards, 802.16 flavors, shall we say. And then the certification profile further defines various parameters of the system, such as the operating frequency, channel, bandwidth, the duplexing mode. Okay. Now, equipment then is certified against the certification profiles. So if you have the same certification profile, then interoperability is guaranteed. This certification is carried out by the WiMAX Forum, which is an industry-based consortium which proposes these basic standards and then certifies against the profiles. Okay. So, there is work to do with mobility, handovers, etc. What we're going to mainly look at here is, again, the sort of point-to-point connectivity as specified by the PHY and MAC layers. And so again, you can think of this as, again, we're part of this we're part of the 802 family. And so their main order of business is providing this point-to-point connectivity. And so, we'll see a few features of the PHY. And we'll also discuss a few features of the MAC layer. And what we see here is that the MAC is split into three portions. There's a security sublayer, which provides encryption and authentication. So again, since it's a wireless system, that's important. And that gives you your sort of point-to-point authorization. The common sublayer, which is sort of concerned with the data transmission. So how do you provide access to the radio system, or how do you get your resource allocations, error handling, and sort of, again, importantly and critically for 4G, quality of service. And then finally, convergence sublayer. And the point of the convergence sublayer is to allow you to interface with other networks. Okay. So you think of this as just delivering IP packets over a radio system, much the same way that the LTE base stations would. Okay. So, again, this is 802.16e, so WiMAX. It's not
quite up to the 4G standards. This is 3G. Okay. And again, this has an OFDM-based tri-layer. You get high peak data rates. You have scalable bandwidth and data rate supports. So you can, again, change things based on channel capacity, or channel conditions, I should say, and adaptive modulation encoding, again, to be able to change according to channel conditions. ARQ is provided, and interestingly, it's provided both at the MAC layer and also in terms of hybrid ARQ, which we'll see a bit about how that works, but that has implementation at the PHY level. It supports both time division duplexing and frequency division duplexing, so you take your pick. And it allows multiplexing through OFDMA. Okay, so different OFDM channels can be allocated to different users. And again, has MIMO techniques built in. Okay, and so again, what we see in this list is this is all the things that we need for the 3G standard. We have quality of service support. And again, because of the MAC is connection oriented, so it allows sort of precise allocation of resources, which is pretty much what we need for quality of service. And so again, what we'll see is that we have a number of different traffic classes, and we can allocate different resources based on the type of traffic. Okay, we'll go into more detail on that later. There's good, reasonably good security, and there is support for mobility in the form of handovers, but also in the form of sort of taking the measurements that you need to do to make handover decisions. And by default, it's in 802, so it's IP-based. And again, that's where the mobile telephony has been moving. Okay. So depending on the exact standard, OFDM is handled in a number of different ways, which has to, and so firstly you can specify your fast Fourier transform size, which is related then again then to the number of subcarriers you can have, and so all those are can be changed, and so in the first instance they're fixed and so don't dynamically change anyway. And so as an example, in this case, FT256, we would provide 492 data channels and sort of additional control information. And if you have a fixed FFT size, what that means is that the subcarrier spacing is going to vary with the channel bandwidth. So the more, the higher bandwidth you have, the decreased signal time. And then again, since we have, as you recall, you have the guard period, a larger fraction of that time is going to be needed to overcome delays. Okay. A second option is that the FFT is scalable, and in this case, The subcarrier spacing is maintained, so you just, again, as the FFT increases, then you have that you need a larger bandwidth in which to transmit your signal. Okay. And, of course, if you maintain the subcarrier frequency, your guard time stays the same. And so the idea here is that you sort of try to
you grab as much bandwidth as you can. The more bandwidth you have, the larger FFT you can use. Okay.
As for the LTE, resources are split both along sub-channels and also into time slots, and then allocation is made by channel and slot. Okay. And so, again, if you had a sort of connection oriented system, you could think about just allocating the channel, but here
as time progresses, channels are used by different signals. Okay. So, the resource allocation, again, it's the basic unit is this channel plus time slot. And this is the allocation then will be determined by the base station or access point. And the allocation is going to be based on the quality of service requirements. And again, we'll see later exactly how what the user can negotiate in that terms, and also the channel conditions, which are going to determine how much data is being transmitted over a specific frequency spectrum. Okay. And so what we end up with is that the allocation is divided between uplink and downlink, and how much is allocated between the two can vary depending on demand. And then again, within the uplink or the downlink, it's allocated to specific users. Okay, so here. Again, we have a picture of what's going to happen we have time, and again, it will be divided up into a specific number of slots or frame, and then you have control information, so in particular there's information about the mapping of the channels, so the mobile users know when to look for their specific information. Okay. And then, after the control information, again, our resources are split into downlink, which would have at least as much resources run more than the uplink direction and uplink direction. Okay. And so again, an end user, based on the map, is going to know when to receive data, and also when they're allowed to transmit data. Okay.
Again, various modulation encoding is allowed. So everywhere that from BPSK, again, up to 64 QAM. And the modulation encoding can change on a burst-by-burst basis. So when you're switching from dealing with one mobile unit to another mobile unit, these schemes can change. They're going to be determined based on channel quality, which is estimated in both the uplink and the downlink direction. And then the base station is going to choose the modulation encoding scheme. And there's a total of 52 possible combinations for modulation encoding. And so again, what we see is the farther you get from the base station, the the worse the channel quality will be, and so your modulation scheme will reflect that. You won't be sending quite so many bits per symbol, but you will also have your channel coding schemes will vary as well. So the worse the channel quality, the more redundancy you can add, so the better error recovery you can have. Okay. And so again, these vary slightly in uplink and downlink direction, but the thing to walk away with is just that you can change both modulation and channel coding to reflect the quality of your channel. Okay. So ARQ is available at the MAC layer. At the PHY level layer, you get what's called hybrid ARQ. And again, this is implemented in hardware and allows for both forward error correction and block retransmission. Okay. And so there's two different types. The basic scheme type one, your data is encoded in such a way that forward error correction is possible. And so you attempt in the first instance to correct your errors. If that's not possible, the blocks are retransmitted. And then information from the original block plus the retransmitted block . Okay, so sorry about that slight hitch. I forgot to plug in my laptop, which doesn't have a great battery, but it looks like we're still recording, so we're all right. I totally lost my place. Okay, so you first attempt to correct your error. If not, you retransmit, and the retransmitted blocks are combined with previous blocks for decoding, with the hope that the information from multiple blocks will aid in the process. Okay. And so WiMAX combines that again with sort of multiplexing or multiple access, and so overall you can maintain throughput by sort of one
channel is waiting for ARQ, or one process, one user is waiting for ARQ, other users can transmit on the same channel. In type 2, ARQ, again, forward error correction is attempted. If not, retransmissions are encoded differently, so a stronger encoding is used on the assumption that there's some problem with the channel and you need the additional information. Okay. So, as we saw before, the base station determines the resource allocation in the uplink and downlink direction, so there's not really any resource contention. And so the downlink is based on the needs of the incoming traffic, so are you streaming your video or whatever. The uplink is requested by the mobile station. The mobile station can have multiple connections with the base station, again corresponding to different usage. If that's the case, the base station will allocate bandwidth as a block, sort of again based on the overall needs, but then the mobile station can use that block as it sees fit. The base station uses polling to solicit requests. Unicast, they can ask individual users, or multicast. The requests can be contention based, so again for less important data traffic, just let them slug it out. Okay. And that would be something like there would be an Aloha based scheme. Okay. If the mobile station already has some fixed allocation, then it has to use that allocation to make any additional resource requests. Okay, so again what we see is that the mobile stations are allowed to ask for resources and negotiate with the base station for resources, and again there's a number of ways in which that can be done. We'll see how this ties into the quality of service allocations for WiMAX. Okay. Okay. So, again, it's connection oriented. The mobile station and the base station have multiple connections, so you need the directional connections, and separate connections are established to send data and control information. Okay. Data flows are identified with specific quality of service parameters. So you have each data flow then will have an ID, a connection ID, a number of quality of service parameters. Okay, and then some form to check that you're actually behaving yourself within that. And the quality of service parameters possible are the priority, the rate, burst rate,
a minimum rate, so you have a maximum and a minimum rate. The scheduling and ARQ type, maximum delay, jitter, bandwidth, etc.
Okay, so again, these ones that you see over and over again when talking about quality of service for data. Okay. Within that,
WiMAX supports 5 services to provide the correct quality of service allocation. Okay, and so that's resource mapping sort of to go with quality of service. Okay. And so they don't actually specify how the
resource allocation has to be done, but on the other hand, there's
some ways that it's fairly clear what you need to do. Okay, so there's 5 basic categories: unsolicited, grant, service, and so that's
for time-critical applications that have periodic and predictable resource requirements.
Real-time polling service is for periodic time-critical applications that have unpredictable resource requirements. Non-real-time polling service is things which don't have any sort of time criticality but do have, again, some requirement for resources. Best effort is just that. And then extended real-time variable rate services, it's sort of somewhere between unsolicited grant and real-time polling, in which you sort of think you have a minimum requirement, but you might have additional periodic requirements.
Okay. So, for each of these, again, you need certain resources, and based on that, there will be allocations from the base station.
So, again, just going through them, if you have an unsolicited grant service,
this is going to support fixed-size data packets at a constant bit rate.
Okay. And so what you're going to need to specify for this is the maximum sustained traffic rate, the maximum latency, the tolerated jitter, and the ARQ policy. And the way this is achieved is that resources are offered on a periodic basis with no need to explicitly request the bandwidth at each time. So periodically, you get your allocation and you can transmit during that allocation. And so this eliminates all the requested overheads if you had to go and ask for the resources periodically. Okay. So that's great if, again, you can say at the beginning exactly what resources you use. And again, the example there was voice over IP without silence suppression, so you're sending exactly the same amount of data every time. There are other applications which do need sort of to periodically or at a certain rate transmit data. but they're also trying to get different amounts of data, for example, streaming video. So as you have to transmit the frames periodically, but frames can be of different size. Okay. And so in this case, again, what do we need to specify? Well, that we want a minimum rate and the maximum rate, what latency will be tolerated, and what, again, the ARQ policy is. The way this can be accommodated now, again, efficiently, is that now the base station allows the mobile station to periodically tell it how much bandwidth it needs. Okay, so periodically it requests that bandwidth. And that period is frequently enough to make sure that the latency requirements are met. Okay. So in that way, the user gets access to the resources it wants, but the requesting is done in an efficient manner, so the user doesn't have to contend with other users. It's guaranteed to at least be able to put its request in. Okay, so non-real-time polling service is supports delay-tolerant data streams with some minimum data rate. Okay, so an example of that would be something like FTP, file transfer. You want the minimum data rate so that it gets there eventually, and you're not waiting forever, but there's no real-time criticality to it. Okay. So in this case, you specify minimum and maximum data rate, traffic priority, so how important do you think this is? Okay. Like the previous case, the real-time polling service, the user is provided a poll, is polled for their data requirements, but now the polling is not done as frequently. So the average, it's done on average every few seconds. Okay. So every once in a while it's guaranteed to be able to ask for data, and that will support some minimum rate, but and not done in a time-critical fashion. The mobile stations can also request additional resources through the contention-based request mechanism. Okay. Best effort services don't obviously provide for any guarantees. Again, a maximum data rate is specified just in terms of planning. They can be prioritized, but the resources must be contended for. Okay, so there's no guarantee of resources. Okay. And finally, we have extended real-time variable rate services. Okay, and here we have variable data rates with where we need some guarantee on the basic data rate and the delay, and so forth with silence suppression. And so again, we specify our minimum and maximum data rates, our latency, and our jitter. And now, as I said, it was a halfway house between the first two. You're given a base allocation, so you're given some base allocation, but you can also request additional resources as part of that allocation. Okay. So the difference from previously is how you can request the resources. Before, additional resources had to be contended for. Now they can be requested. Okay. So again, what we see is that there's a fairly well thought out plan for providing quality of service. It is based on sort of a connection-oriented approach, so and controlled centrally by the base station. And so, just wrapping up. The 802.16e standard, which again we've just sort of touched on a few highlights of this standard, was 3G compliant, and it has since evolved and improved, and the current standard 802.16l then becomes 4G compliant. And mainly by improvement of data rates for the area interface. As with all of these 802 standards, there are other flavors as well, things like 802.16j, which defines multi-hop relays. So again, you can see how that would slot in as well. Okay, so we're not going to say a whole pile about it. Just again, the key technologies, the OFDM and the MIMO, what we've talked about, the OFDM and the quality of service previously, that all stays. The MIMO was extended and improved. Multi-hop relays are supported. Femto base stations are supported, so again, I didn't really go into that, but another way of sort of improving capacity in the system, again. And handover is supported, and sort of interoperability with other systems. So again, this is sort of what's changed. The basic OFDM stays the same. The MIMO is improved. The control channels are more structured. The ARQ has changed a bit. The QoS adds a sixth category of adaptive branch pooling. And finally, power conservation is also improved. Okay, so that's pretty much all I'm going to say. Again, I've wanted to mention WiMAX predominantly, again, because it's where all these techniques that are dominant now started. Okay. And it is a competing 4G standard.
No need for me to go through the references. There's a reference for OFDM, for MIMO, LTE, LTE Advanced, and WiMAX, and pretty much all of these are fairly high level, with the exception of the OFDM tutorial, complex to real. It's more detailed than you'll actually need to do any exam of mine, but if you want to dig into exactly how OFDM works, but it's a very good reference. Okay, so that's it for course material. Thought it would never end. Now, as I said, if you've looked at Moodle, you will see that there is a review, set of review slides, and I don't particularly propose to read them out to you. We'll start off with, just the sort of the generals, what you have ever available in a course. And so, we have the lecture notes, which hopefully now are all available. You have the Camtasia recordings of the lectures. Again, they should soon all be available. And at least in my portion, and hopefully in Hrishikesh's, there are references for where you go beyond the notes. Okay. A number of problem sets have been posted, and hopefully you guys have tried all the problems now. I would suggest you do try them before you. All of the solutions will be posted again in reasonably good time. I hope to have them by early next week, not this week. I think Hrishikesh said one of his would be the following week. Okay, but yeah, try them first. I will post the solutions. Solutions will be posted for all of them. And finally, there are old exams available as well. I think it was mentioned that one of them is missing from the registry website, so I'll post that exam so you can have a look at it. Okay. And so, go home, sleep. Okay. So, a sample exam plus solutions is posted, and the only thing I'll say about that is it's indicative of the format of the exams. You can do data mining on the, what are there, 5 exams available, and it might get you somewhere, but in general, the information I'd like you to take away from it is just formatting. So if you answer 4 out of 5 questions, and generally, as sub-questions, there's 3 types of things we can ask you. We can ask you to derive a result. There's not a whole pile of derivations in this module. There's a few, for instance, the multi-path result. You can calculate, so things like I've asked you on problem sets, and then this sort of vast category of general knowledge. I do have to apologize, but anytime you start foraying into the telephony world, there's a lot of details. I tried to keep it down as much as possible, but there are a lot of details. And so do your best. Okay, and again, a caution against over-analysis, and in particular, this is the first year, for instance, for Hrishikesh's lecture, and he did set 2 exam problems. They'll be in these styles, but they'll be
from his viewpoint, not from mine, so you can't infer what he thinks from my old exams. Okay, so what's on the exams? Everything. I did that. Look, I told you, you can, again, make what you will of that information. And so, if I get out, that's the safe sphere. I seem to be repeating myself here. That's what happens when you get old. But again, you have problems or derivations or facts. And facts are numerous. Okay. So, I took a swing through each of the lectures and just sort of tried to summarize a few of the high points. This is where I stop reading the slides because I don't think it's that useful at this point, but you can look at it, you know, as you're studying. Okay, yeah, well, that's one point.
Yeah, if you were here, you remember there was a rather quick swing through Bluetooth. Have a look at the first 13 slides, which again just basically say something about the basics of how Bluetooth is organized. I'm not going to ask you any gory details of something I didn't do. I did really quickly in lecture.
So it's not an exam?
Bluetooth, maybe.
It looks like it's only a repeat exam. Probably our previous
slide. Well, that may be. So, see, you've gained some important information. Now just make sure you pass the first exam. Okay, now, these are fishy questions, so, I mean, don't hold me to it. I quick banged through slides, and this looked mainly like what he was talking about. Those GSM slides are mine. If you have any questions or concerns, please do contact Hrishikesh directly. Okay, and again, 3G and 4G, very little maths, lots of detail. Okay, so again, I will post the solutions to the problem sets. If you have any questions, feel free to come by. As I said at the beginning, I'll say repeat now. The easiest way to catch hold of me is through email. I'll be happy to make an appointment to talk to you in person if that's what you want, but if you just swing by my office, you may or may not find me in. So best of luck on this exam, all the exams, all your assignments, and I guess I'll be seeing you in May, if not before then. Okay, take care.